You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Ephesians is one of those letters that says it's from Paul, but was not written by Paul. Just compare the vocabulary and themes to the authentic Paul, and it's pretty clear. But interestingly, it probably wasn't written to the Ephesians either. In our earliest and most reliable manuscript, there's no mention of Ephesus in the text. So many scholars contend that what has been called Paul's letter to the Ephesians would be more accurately called an enthusiastic circular letter meant for lots of different churches by someone you can trust. Not as easy to market. But at any rate, in the background is the reality of conflict between newly converted Gentiles and Jewish believers who are having to get along, say, a generation or two after Paul. So our passage today joins a lecture already in progress, a lecture encouraging the hearers to abandon their old tribal and arrogant ways and fully enter into something new, which makes the letter's major themes of unity and reconciliation no surprise at all.
Our words of wisdom are from Ephesians 4, verses 22 through 24.
You were taught to put away your former way of life, your old self, corrupt and deluded by its lusts, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to clothe yourselves with the new self, created according to the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. You recognize that? It's the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence, and it shows us two very particular things about the signers. First, they placed a lot of trust in a thing called providence, which was Enlightenment shorthand for a cross between fate and some vaguely reassuring force for good. Providence was a placeholder idea that could be used by both deists and more traditional religious folks, where deists could hear it and relate to nature, and people of a Christian bent could hear it and think of God. But by far, the most significant part of this last sentence is where the signers pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. To whom? To one another. They made it clear that they depended on each other. But instead of inspiring camaraderie today, that last bit has come to sound more and more like a contradiction. Pledging to each other our what? Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor? How is that independence? Truth be told, many Americans have forgotten that Independence Day is about the independence of a nation, not of a bunch of people looking after their own interests. Look around and you'll see the evidence of a people who've slipped into a selfish, lazy way of thinking, imagining that the 4th of July is all about allowing every American to stand alone as a rugged individual who can do it their own way, thank you very much. The notion that we are inevitably and undeniably dependent on one another was not lost on the pioneers out on the frontier. If you wanted to raise a barn, you couldn't do it without your neighbors. If you fell sick, you could depend on the people in the next cabin to fetch the doctor. You could look across the valley through a snowstorm and seeing the light from a lantern in the neighbor's window assured that you were not alone. But today, the ideal home in America is different. It's a big house, set back from the road, maybe in a gated community with motion detector security cameras you can monitor from your phone and automatic garage doors that let us slip in and out of the house without having to interact with the neighbors. Whew! In the worst case scenario of ourselves, our lives become a never-ending quest for the latest gadgets and material goods and the effort to accumulate enough money that we never have to depend on anyone ever again. Independence, baby! That way we can thump ourselves on the chest and proclaim, I'm a self-made person. My home is my castle. My car is my castle on wheels. And God help you if you ever cut me off. You say I hurt you? So sue me. Our politicians and conspiracy theorists are exacerbating the situation by amping up our suspicions about one another and driving wedges of mistrust and intolerance between us, all the while fanning the flames of a false belief that the end-all and be-all of the American dream is to place the individual and their preferences atop the highest pedestal. But wait, what are we going to do about that last sentence staring out at us from the Declaration of Independence? I mean, call it what you will, but I like to think of that last sentence as a declaration of dependence. We pledge to be there for one another going forward with our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor, right? Am I getting that wrong? And this is where the message of Ephesians is all the more important for us to hear. Not as Christians, not as Americans, but as human beings. Put away your former way of life, your old self, corrupt and deluded by its lusts, that primal tribal self that is always and only about you and your needs and wants. Instead, be renewed in the spirit of your minds and clothe yourselves with the new self, created according to the likeness of God, who, as I think we've covered before, has a soft spot for widows, orphans, and refugees. Great objective, but not so easy to pull off. The founders knew this from experience. Even before the ink had dried on the Declaration of Independence, it was clear that all its aspirational talk would be just that, aspirational, unless we had some kind of framework to work from, a framework we now know as the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But this other thing, this Declaration of Independence, is something more than the nuts and bolts of Constitution or Bill of Rights. It's a declaration of dreams. Dreams that even the Constitution and the Bill of Rights failed to make real. Dreams that have yet to be realized. As Amanda Gorman preached in her inaugural poem, The Hill We Climb, we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. Far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We're striving to forge a union with a purpose. And we can argue what the finer points of that purpose might be, but you've got to agree that includes living into all those unalienable rights, yes? But when the founders wrote that all men are created equal, did they really believe it, seeing that many of them were slave owners and that women were disenfranchised from the process? Or did they just suspend disbelief and count on the next generation rising to the challenge of figuring out what all men are created equal actually looks like? So, in order for the dream that all people are created equal to be advanced, it took a bloody civil war, multiple amendments to the Constitution, generations of discrimination, violence, and murder, as well as the Civil Rights Act to extend that dream to where it is today, such as it is. The ideal is there, even though equality still slips through the proverbial cracks to this day. Could the founders have imagined that nearly 200 years later, Martin Luther King Jr. would be compelled to stand on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and say, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And here it is, another 60 years later, and MLK's dream is still not realized. And we have people who are actively working to turn back the clock to a time of less equality. On this Independence Day, we as a nation need to hear the mandate from Ephesians. Put away your former way of life, your old self, corrupt and deluded by its lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your minds with dreams of what we have yet to achieve. Sadly, for some, Independence Day is about nostalgia for the way things used to be back in the good old days. And they're none too happy if you remind them that such thinking is not a very American sentiment. The author of the Declaration himself, Thomas Jefferson, wrote, I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past. So that's what I'm celebrating this 4th of July. Grateful acknowledgement of our country's founding, honesty about its shortcomings, and with the founders, aspiring to a way of being that we haven't quite figured out yet. I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past. But be careful. If you even mention the intertwining of our lives and our fortunes, you're likely to be greeted by howls of disapproval. That sounds like some kind of socialist propaganda or something. But that pledge of mutual support is as much a part of the Declaration of Independence as all the self-centered talk of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is. As Gorman expressed in her poem, Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. I think living up to our own time, of building those bridges, has to include more than just celebrating a vague, feel-good holiday, celebrating stuff that happened a long time ago. It has to include being honest about where we've fallen short in making the dreams of the founders a reality. And that's going to take work. As record-breaking Olympian Jesse Owens said, we all have dreams, but in order to make dreams come into reality, it takes an awful lot of determination, dedication, self-discipline, and effort. Changing the way you celebrate the 4th of July will take a conscious effort. It's on the order of trying to reorient your location in the cosmos. Try this experiment. Next time you're up in time for a sunrise, pause for a moment to reorient your perspective. As the sun comes up, remind yourself that the sun isn't going anywhere. It's an optical illusion. You, on the other hand, are hurtling in the direction of the sun at about 1,000 miles per hour. Lean into it. The sun is stationary. You are moving. It can be a hard illusion to break, but once you do, it's one of those things that you can't unsee. That's what I'm talking about when I challenge you to reorient the way you celebrate the 4th of July. From syrupy celebration of stuff that happened long ago to the realization that the dream is not yet realized. We are hurtling forward into a future that has yet to be shaped. And if we're to take Ephesians' advice to be renewed in the spirit of our minds seriously, we need to embrace the 4th of July not as some saccharine dose of nostalgia, but as a time to chart our course forward. Because the dreams of that original 4th of July still have a long way to go to be made real. As she has so eloquently stated in her poem, Amanda Gorman says. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover, and every known nook of our nation and every corner called our country, our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge, battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it. Can we see it? Will we be it? If we, with the founders, pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to one another, the chances start improving. May your 4th of July leave you grateful, but unsatisfied. There's a lot to do, but only if we're brave enough to see it, brave enough to be it. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.